Et donc, tu termines ta thèse cette année?
Ouais, exact.
Du speaker, mais là, ça fait un moment qu'on discute tous ensemble, donc bah, les gens ont compris. Donc, Julien, bienvenue déjà. Thésard en troisième année avec Cyril Pitrou à l'IAP, l'Astrophysique de Paris. Près de ça, sous dénonce un juin. Donc, son CV vite fait, parce que typiquement, on ne remonte pas avant enfin, la thèse, enfin, du passé. On l'ignore. Et bah, donc, t'es bienvenu dans ton séminaire. Bah, n'hésitez pas à poser des questions à tout moment, ni à allumer votre caméra, ça rend les choses plus sympas. Vas-y.
Okay, great. So I'm going to talk today about precision calculation of neutrino decoupling, a work which I did with my supervisor, Cyril Pitrou at IAP, and in collaboration with Christina Volpe from FSC. And it's based on these two papers, and in particular, the first one. Just to give a broad context about what do I mean by neutrino decoupling and why we need a precision calculation. First, this usual picture of the evolution of the universe in the hot Big Bang model. And I will focus on the first seconds, on the first hundreds of seconds after the Big Bang, which corresponds to the so-called mega electron volt age. Mega electron volt age because the temperature of the universe at that moment is about 1 mega electron volt. This age is really interesting because of the many events that take place at that stage, basically neutrino decoupling, electron positron annihilations, and BBN. So first, the species that are present in the universe when the temperature is about 1 mega electron volt are photons, electrons, positrons, neutrinos, and antineutrinos. The electrons, positrons, and photons are tightly coupled through electromagnetic interactions, while neutrinos, antineutrinos, and electromagnetic plasma are in contact through weak interactions. But since these interactions are weak, when the temperature goes below 1 mega electron volt, it's not enough. The interactions are not strong enough anymore to maintain equilibrium, to maintain the thermal contact. And there is the so-called neutrino decoupling, which corresponds to the formation of the cosmic neutrino background, exactly like the cosmic microwave background. Then, if we look at what happens in the electromagnetic plasma, there is set of reactions taking place, and in particular, electron positron annihilations, and in reverse, electron positron pair creations. But when the temperature of the photons goes below the electron mass, the reaction re gets really displaced in just the direct way, which means that electrons and positrons will completely annihilate into photons, and the density of electrons and positrons will dramatically decrease. So this takes place at the electron mass, which is 0.5 mega electron volt. And then the photon temperature continues to decrease, and at some point it's small enough so that you can produce enough deuterium to start the whole chain of reaction that is the chain of nuclear reactions for Big Bang nucleosynthesis. And this allows us to, I mean, this leads to the production of light elements in the early universe. And so the typical temperature for BBN is 0.1 mega electron volt. So what you can see is that at just around one, just for in a very close range of temperatures, many different physical phenomena take place. And if you want to have a precise picture of this framework, you need to take into account the interplay between those different phenomena. And that's essentially what I'm going to talk about. So first, the basic elements of what we call the instantaneous neutrino decoupling. This approximation consists in saying that first neutrinos decouple, and then later on, electrons and positrons annihilate. But those two events are really separated, which means that when neutrinos decouple, electrons and positrons have not annihilated at all. So I'm just saying that now, and I won't come back to it after. I will use the low energy four Fermi theory for weak interactions. It means that every scattering reaction, etc., can be explained with the Fermi constant. And in this context, it's really easy to compute the decoupling temperature. That is the moment when the collision rate gamma becomes equal to the expansion rate H. If this ratio was larger than one, it would mean that you have enough collision during one Hubble time to maintain thermal equilibrium. When this goes below one, there is no, particles don't interact anymore, don't interact enough anymore, and it's decoupling. And so when you put in the numbers, you see that this decoupling takes place at about 1 mV, hence the number I put before. So once again, below 1 mV, you can schematically consider that there are two separate, in terms of interactions, not fields, but like a set of particles. And when electrons and positrons annihilate, you get a reheating of photons, but not of neutrinos and antineutrinos. You can be more precise in terms of theoretical predictions by considering the conservation of entropy in each separate fluid. And this is because the entropy per cumulative volume is the conserved quantity in terms of thermodynamics. And so for neutrinos, you can see that it leads to a temperature that decreases as A minus one with A the scale factor. And for photons, since there is this reheating due to electron positron annihilations, you can show that all that leads to the ratio between photon and neutrino temperatures being equal to about 1.4. And this is the standard ratio that we get in the instantaneous neutrino decoupling approximation. However, there are a few limits that I want to highlight. First, since decoupling and E plus minus annihilations are really close in time or in temperature range, there will be a slight overlap between them, which means that part of the entropy of electrons and positrons will be transferred to neutrinos. If you plot the temperature times the scale factor, it means that you will get a small reheating of neutrinos and consequently a smaller reheating of photons. Then there are different interactions of electron neutrino and muon and tau neutrinos. This is due to the fact that for every flavor of neutrinos, you have these types of processes, neutral current processes, in terms of scattering with electrons, for instance. But for electronic neutrinos and electronic neutrinos only, there exists a charge current because you have electrons in the background, so they can interact through charge current. And this means that electronic neutrinos compared to muon and tau neutrinos will interact more. This leads to a later decoupling and a higher energy transfer. And finally, you have a whole distribution of energies for neutrinos. And since the cross-section of the various processes depends on the energy, you will get the decoupling will be an out-of-equilibrium process depending on the energy, and this will lead to spectral distortions. All in all, we need, if we want to be precise, if we want to numerically track the evolution of neutrinos, we need to evolve the distribution functions, which account for basically the neutrino spectra, and we expect them to be flavor-dependent, momentum-dependent, and to be not equilibrium Fermi Dirac distributions. So just a few details, not that important. The evolution equation that is important is the so-called Boltzmann equation. And in the plots I will show later, the x-axis will be in terms of co-moving temperature, that is the temperature neutrinos would have in the instantaneous decoupling approximation. So that temperature that decreases as a minus one. And then I will use the parameterization of the distribution function. In terms of an effective Fermi Dirac spectrum with an effective temperature, which is the temperature that would give the same energy density as the real distribution. And on top of this effective spectrum, of this effective Fermi Dirac spectrum, non-thermal distortions. And initially at high temperatures, all species are coupled at a common temperature with an equilibrium distribution. And so this is, with all these hypotheses, what we get. On the top plot, you have the I always divide by the comoving temperature so that we can compare the values of the temperature with one. And so you can see, I zoom in this insert plot, you can see indeed that the final photon temperature is a bit smaller than the value it would have in the instantaneous decoupling approximation. And if we look at the neutrino temperatures, that's on the bottom panel, I put it in log scale, you can see that the ratio of the temperature is not equal to one, it's a bit higher than one, which corresponds to, you have here the values, which corresponds to an increased energy density in neutrinos compared to this instantaneous neutrino decoupling approximation. If I plot it a bit differently, I will only focus now on the neutrino temperatures and the neutrino spectral distortions. So you have you can see that the effective temperatures, they differ from the comoving temperature at about 0.2%. And for the effective distortions, it's distortions of about 1%. And so two comments. First, we see that for the electronic neutrinos, indeed, we have a higher effective temperature, which means there is a higher energy transfer. As I said before, this is due to the existence of charge current processes. And likewise, for the effective distortions, its amplitude, its magnitude is higher for electronic neutrinos. So once again,
sorry,
yes.
May I ask? So the plot we see on the right is the solution of the correct Boltzmann equation, right?
Yeah. Once you solve the Boltzmann equation, you have the temperature which are plotted on the left and the delta G nu on the right.
Okay, accounting for all the processes with the neutral and charged currents.
Exactly, and so that's why you have the blue curve, which is more bigger, basically. And one final comment, there is absolutely no difference at this stage between nu mu and nu tau because they have exactly the same interactions. There is no way to differentiate between them for now. So how do we parameterize this? If we compute the neutrino and antineutrino energy density, in the instantaneous decoupling approximation, this is what you get. This 7 over 8 is due to the fermionic nature of neutrinos. You can recognize here the ratio of temperatures between neutrinos and photons. And this 3 is for the three families of neutrinos. But as I said, there is a higher energy density in neutrinos. So we parameterize it with this effective number of neutrinos and effective. And from the results I showed just before, I get 3.043. And this is in a perfect agreement with the experimental constraints, which are at that stage given by Planck or SPT3G by CMB experiments, and which are quite loose compared to the level of precision I can get now. But actually, these experiments have proven that we expect that there are indeed three families of neutrinos. But the upcoming CMB experiment, like CMB stage 4, expect precision on N effective below 1%. So that's why we need to provide a standard theoretical prediction that is much more precise than the experimental result they will get, so that we can say if there is a large discrepancy, this is absolutely not due to mistakes in the standard calculation or so. And that's why there has been for the last decade a push for below 10 to the minus 3 precision on an effective, because here that last number is not precise enough because we have missed some important physical ingredients in the calculation. And basically the most crucial one being neutrino masses and mixings. The fact that it's the phenomenon of flavor oscillations that I will now that will be now the core of my talk. So brief recap on massive neutrinos in the standard model, or should I say in the beyond the standard model, because in the standard model, properly said, there are three species of massless neutrinos. But ever since the, for instance, the Homestake experiment or all the debate about the solar neutrino problem, now the picture is there. We know, I mean, we expect at least two neutrinos to be massive. It corresponds in terms of quantum states to say that the flavor states are not the same as the mass states. And there is between two of them a change of basis matrix, a mixing matrix, that is the PMNS mixing matrix. And due to these mixing, to the mixing angles that are involved in this matrix, we have the phenomenon of neutrino oscillations. It means that if you start, you create an electronic neutrino, and you let it propagate in vacuum, since it's a superposition of the different mass states, which will propagate with different masses, so different phases, when you measure the flavor state at a later time, you will not necessarily get an electronic neutrino. And the probability to measure an electronic neutrino oscillates in time, and you can, starting with an electronic neutrino, obtain a muonic neutrino, et cetera, et cetera. So this is the phenomenon of neutrino oscillation. But this has a very important consequence. It's the fact that three distribution functions are not sufficient anymore to describe our neutrino ensemble. We need to promote this set of three functions to a full density matrix, accounting with the off-diagonal components, accounting for this mixing, for instance, E mu, E tau. And the diagonal components will just be the generalization of the usual distribution functions. And once you have this more complicated object, the question is, what is its evolution equation? How do we generalize the Boltzmann equation? And there have been several derivations of this equation. And in our paper, we provided a new one with an extended BBGKY hierarchy. But I mean, that's not the whole subject here. Anyway, the equation we get is a so-called quantum kinetic equation. That has in the context I'm interested in today has this form. On the left-hand side, you can recognize the time derivative with accounting for the expansion of the universe, hence the H term. And on the right-hand side, different contributions. First, the vacuum term. This is the term that is responsible for oscillations in vacuum. Then, since neutrinos do not propagate in vacuum, but in a bath of electrons and positrons, there is this lepton mean field that is an effective mean field potential due to the charged lepton background, basically the energy and pressure density of electrons and positrons. And finally, the last term is the collision term that accounts for scattering annihilations with electrons and positrons and between neutrinos and antineutrinos. And so if we compare it to the Boltzmann equation with just the three distribution functions, first, there wouldn't be any of these terms because there wouldn't be mixing, wouldn't be flavor oscillations. And the collision term is more complicated now because it has a full matrix structure with off-diagonal components. And our calculation was the first one with the full matrix structure, in particular, the off-diagonal components for the neutrino self-interactions. So this is the full quantum kinetic equation that now we want to solve.
Sorry, can you repeat what is the last term of the collision term?
The last term in the collision term, the self-interactions, that is scattering between neutrinos with antineutrinos or annihilations between neutrino and antineutrinos.
Producing what?
Sorry, what?
They are closed loops.
No, I mean, just you get one neutrino and another neutrino. For instance, nu e plus nu mu gives a nu e plus nu mu.
Okay, so new arrows, new.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, okay. I wrote it like that just for... get a shorter annotation, but yeah, that's not very clever. Okay, so if we solve this equation, I just put it the results. This is what we get for the effective temperatures. We can define effective temperatures for the diagonal components, just like before. And so essentially, it looks like not much has changed, except that the dashed lines are the previous results without mixing, and now the solid lines are the full result. You basically get a sort of equilibration between the different flavors. But the most striking thing is that we have no visible oscillations. There are no flavor oscillations at a given frequency. And it led us to think that there must be a way to effectively describe these mixing and these oscillations with an approximate numerical scheme. And this is actually very important because when you compute the full quantum kinetic equation with the full collision term, it's computationally very expensive, notably because there are very different timescales involved, and we will use this existence of different timescales to get an approximation that really speeds up the whole computation of the solution of the equation. So just to give the argument in a simplified framework, I would consider two neutrino mixing. So instead of full three by three matrices, just 2 by 2, and just keep the vacuum term, no mean field, for it will be simpler. So this is the evolution equation of the density matrix. And if I go to the mass spaces, with the rho m being the density matrix in the mass spaces, then the Hamiltonian becomes diagonal. And then you can solve it very easily. And you see that the diagonal components of rho m, I will not consider the collision term. I only keep the blue part of the equation. Then the solution is given by constant terms on the diagonal and oscillating terms on the off diagonal. So schematically, it corresponds to that. If I put at one point some neutrinos, then the diagonal components stay constant and the off-diagonal components oscillate. So now if the collision term is sort of schematically a sort of random neutrino injection, it will correspond to adding these constant contributions on the diagonal. And then the off-diagonal, it will correspond to adding incoherent contributions, very oscillating terms, but with random phases on the off-diagonal. And this will lead, once you sum them, and in particular, if the oscillation is very fast compared to the other rates, basically the injection rate, this will lead to a cancellation. It will average to zero on the off-diagonal components. And so basically, this is the core of the approximation. In the mass basis, we can only keep the diagonal components. It's not in the flavor basis, it's in the mass basis. And if we generalize the argument, taking into account the mean field, instead of going to the mass basis, we need to go to the matter basis, which is the basis which diagonalizes both contributions. And this basis will evolve in time, but if it evolves slowly enough, we call it adiabatically, then the previous argument will still be valid. And so in this basis, the off-diagonal components get averaged out, and we can only keep track of the diagonal components. So that's why we call this approximation an adiabatic transfer of averaged oscillations. And in that case, the effective equation gets really simpler, because we only have to keep the collision term, put it in the matter basis, keep only the diagonal, and if we want, go back to the flavor basis. So it reduces, first it reduces the number of degrees of freedom we have to keep track of, and then we discard the very fast oscillating part, which for the code is really hard to keep track of. And so, let me get back to the results. These were the results without flavor oscillations, and this was the value we got for ineffective. And this is now the results with flavor oscillations. You can see now a small difference between the green and the red curve, that is between nu mu and nu tau. This is because the mixing angles are not exactly the same, so there is a slight difference. And if you compute an effective now with these results, you get a higher value, 3.0440, slightly higher value compared to the no flavor mixing case. And so first, and one last thing to mention, the solid lines are obtained either with this Atawa approximation I just described, or solving the full quantum kinetic equation with no approximation at all, and the results are indistinguishable at our level of precision. So there is, as I said, a slight increase of ineffective, and this can be quite easily understood as I said that the most important channel is, the most important energy transfer will be between electrons and electronic neutrinos. This is the existence of the charge current processes. So if you have a mixing, which means that electronic neutrinos, they get converted into a muon and tau neutrinos, this releases some phase space for electron positron annihilations. The Pauli blocking factors will be less effective, and so you have a small energy entropy transfer that gets more important for the transfer towards electronic neutrinos. So all in all, you get a higher global energy transfer, so a higher ineffective. And if we wanted to be even more precise, look at the, for instance, go below, because this value of an effective that we get, the precision we have is about 10 to the minus 4. When we look at the variation with the mass hierarchy, with the mixing angles, it's about 2 times 10 to the minus 4, and the mass hierarchy, it's even smaller. So if we wanted to go even below, we would reach some major difficulties that are first not needed given the experimental constraints today. And first, we would have to take into account full QED corrections, which is QED corrections in the plasma, because the thermodynamics of the plasma are complicated. And this would be really much more involved. And then at some point, we would have to consider inhomogeneous cosmology, and this would be a whole new level of complexity. So that leads me to my conclusion. As a summary, the whole message of neutrino decoupling is that neutrinos, they capture part of the entropy that is released by electron-positron annihilations. And this leads to, first, what I parameterized with effective temperatures and spectral distortions. With an exact or approximate treatment of neutrino mixing, we got the same results, which were basically this new reference value of ineffective. Before, the value was 3.045, and now, and our results were confirmed by the different team, the results are 3.044. And our calculation was the first with the full collision term, which is needed if you want to reach that level of precision. And so with that, you can look at the consequences, for instance, on BBN abundances. We did that on our paper. Basically, you can look at how including incomplete neutrino decoupling changes the primordial abundances of deuterium, for instance. And this allowed us to solve some discrepancies in the past. But I will stop here and thank you for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Julien. I have some questions or comments. Is there any way before some comments or question by the audience? I can. Yes, Manu, please.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So thank you very much for the very, very interesting talk. To remind me what I was doing a while ago now. Can you understand why the effect for new mu is apparently new compared to other species?
Sorry, I did not get the end of the question.
So you show, for example, side 20, you showed some curve, yeah. Apparently, we have no effect for new mu compared to mu and new tau.
What do you mean new mu compared to new tau? You mean there is no green curve here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, no. It's because the new mu and new tau curves are completely are the same right here, so you cannot see them. So there is an effect for both, but a slightly higher effect for new mu than for new tau.
And do you have any effects? All your results are valid, whatever the neutrino, the nature of neutrino, Majorana or Dirac? Or?
Actually, in that case, yes, because if I take the equation, for instance, If you had Majorana neutrinos, it would change, for instance, the PMNS matrix with extra Majorana phases. Mm-hmm. But the Majorana phases, they do not affect oscillations, basically because since if you look at the structure of the equation, the phases, they just get canceled out. So
in the collision term, for example, the annihilation are different. No?
In the collision term, you could have some effects, but as long as I... For what I, for instance, if you, I don't believe in a collision term, it could, I don't see how, because,
okay, but
I do believe it wouldn't affect at all these results, at least at that that stage. But I would have to think about it more, but I don't think it would change anything.
Okay, and the last
yeah.
Is it interesting to think about explicit model and adding some right neutrino around there and play the game with this or?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you can do many things. Like you can add, for instance, non-standard interactions. You can add sterile neutrinos. You can right-handed neutrinos, and some people have done that. For instance. Sterile neutrinos was a way to, and you add, for instance, a fourth neutrino, and you look if it will get through exactly that kind of processes, if it will get thermalized. And it was shown that if you add the type of sterile neutrinos that was needed to solve some short baseline anomalies, then it would get thermalized and it would lead to an effective equal to 4. And that is a big problem because we know that an effective is very close to 3. So that's the kind of things you want to do. And we were thinking about how we could generalize this at our approximation to, for instance, the case of sterile neutrinos. But okay. That's ongoing work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Julien, you mentioned your result is in agreement with the results obtained by other groups. I would like to ask you how much in agreement and which are the other hypotheses or other strategies by the other group?
So there is the group of, I should have quoted them, I forgot, I'm stupid, Bennett, Pastor, Wong, it's De Salas, and so on. Exactly the same hypothesis, so really the standard calculation, standard model, and they got exactly the same value with a different code. And so in the beginning, they had a smaller venue than us, but we exchanged and we found some mistakes in their calculations, some tiny technical differences. And in the end, we fully agree at, and the only variation that we have would be on 1 or 2 to the -10 to the -4.
The fourth digit. But to say the other use the standard calculations and not your calculation accounting for the neutral and charged currents and all the stuff, but just the standard calculation just with...
I mean, what I mean by standard calculation now is the final calculation I showed.
Because standard is the new.
Yeah, because standard... Okay. In terms of neutrinos, now massive neutrinos is the new standard. Putting it would be like completely insane today.
Not Fermi interaction anymore.
Not what?
Not Fermi interaction anymore.
I mean, Fermi interactions, we still keep it because the Fermi approximation is really valid because of the energy range we have. However, it's the fact to put neutrino density matrices and so on.
Okay. And also at the beginning, you quickly mentioned about the need to go to this level of precision according to the future experiments, future observation, future survey programs.
So
which kind of experiment are you talking about?
I know that if you look at the science paper of CMB stage 4, they quote an uncertainty on ineffective. They expect to be below 1%. So we would expect to know if it's, we could expect to know if it's 3.0321, we could expect to reach that. And so that's why we want it to be at least one order of magnitude below in terms of precision.
Okay. So beyond Simon's observatory, for instance. or already with Sinus Plus Observatory, and the measuring which observable.
I mean, because they can get informations of ineffective thanks to the polarization of the in the CMB. Yeah, I mean that's what new CMB experiments will do, and yeah, so that's basically the older
polarization all, essentially.
Yeah, that's because all the temperature anisotropies, if I'm not wrong, with Planck, I think it's sort of the end of the story. So I guess it's polarization.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Any other comment or question? As I told you before, it's quite an unusual topic for LAN. So thank you.
I hope I was quite as clear as possible.
Well, for me, absolutely. Thank you also for everybody. So maybe we could stop here. Yeah. Thank you again. And as usual, I advertise next week Cafe Club. Next week, and usually we will have two Cafe Club. Let me look at the web page. I'm sorry. The first one, unusual time, and an extra Cafe Club on Monday at 11 a.m. by a former master student from LAM, Marco Shunto, who talk about the cosmic evolution of the stellar to halo mass relation for sentinel satellite galaxies up to redshift 5 using Cosmos 2020 data. And on Wednesday, as usual, by Raul Canameras. I don't have the title. So two meetings next week on Monday and on the Wednesday at 11 a.m.